Hello there and welcome back to the True Travel Podcast with me, Laura Sanders. This week I've been speaking to a travelling artist named Natasha Cross, who's originally from London and is now making her way up through South America, painting, volunteering and teaching as she goes. She's currently in Bolivia, a country which stole her heart and stopped her in her tracks 3 years ago. During that time, Natasha has witnessed some real ups and downs for the country, starting with the political crisis, which struck at the end of 2019, and then of course the pandemic, which saw the entire country enter a strict lockdown. During that time, Natasha wasn't allowed to leave her apartment, and so she painted scenes of what she'd witnessed to keep herself busy and to document some important moments in history. Natasha's also got some funny stories to tell though, like the time her colleague accidentally painted a devil on the wall of a kindergarten class. More on that later. As a travel destination though, Bolivia is often overlooked. But Natasha says for those who are up for a challenge, Bolivia will reward its visitors with some real off-the-beaten-path beauty spots. I hope you enjoy it, and you can find links to Natasha's work and travel stories in the episode description. And as always, remember to subscribe and follow the True Travel Podcast on social media to keep up to date with all of my guests from around the world. So Natasha, you are a travelling artist, which is quite a unique job title, and you're calling me today from Bolivia, and I'm really jealous because I'm stuck here in the UK. So just tell me a little bit about yourself to start with, how you ended up where you are now, what led to it, etc.
So I'd always loved painting and I'd always loved travelling, and what I really wanted to do was find a way to combine both of them. So the first kind of art journey I did was to Cambodia. So I went and I sketched out in Cambodia and I took lots of photos. And then coming back to London, I spent a year painting like all of the scenes and all of the people that had inspired me. And then I had my first solo exhibition. And I felt really inspired. I really loved the whole process. So I then went to Chile and did the same. But I think I just have a lot of like wanderlust. Like there's just so many places that I want to see, and I wanted to see more of the world. So I then, after my second exhibition of all my Chilean paintings, I decided to buy a one-way ticket to South America and to come and do like an art journey through the continent. So that was my plan, was to like just to come over here. I didn't have very much money, but I, you know, had this idea of like traveling through and painting murals and linking up with like small art community projects. And my idea was to start in Chile and to work my way up to Colombia. And essentially what happened is I did start in Chile, I got as far as Bolivia, and then I've been here for 3 years.
Oh my goodness, 3 years, you must really like the place. where are you now? You were just describing to me before we started recording, you were in this really cute little backpacking town.
Yeah, so it's a town called Samaipata, and it's in the east of Bolivia. So it's a very like laid back, it's kind of a hippie style town. And there are some really, really beautiful places to go and see around here. So there's like, there's viewpoints where you can go and see the condors, and there's like ancient forests. So it's a really nice laid back place to be.
Amazing. Like I say, very jealous at this moment in time. So Cambodia, I've been to Cambodia. So whereabouts did you stop in Cambodia, and what sort of scenes did you paint from there?
So I was with a volunteering project in Cambodia, and I was living up in the north in a, I'm not sure how far north it is, but a town called Stung Treng, which is on the shores of like the Mekong River. So I painted the river, I painted scenes kind of out a little bit more in the countryside. I painted some of the Cambodian families that I met. But it's such a beautiful place. It just really inspired me creatively.
Oh, amazing. It is a beautiful place. And I think a lot of people just think of Cambodia and associate it with this really sad history that it has, which of course is a very big part of it, but there are also some beautiful places to go and see. So I can imagine it is very inspiring. So have you always been an artist, Natasha?
Well, I've painted since I was a teenager. Like I remember when I was in like school and college, like I just spent all of my time on my like art studies, and I was just always in the art room. And it was only really just before I came to South America that I also started to like move into like painting murals. So now a lot of what I do is like bigger style artwork. So yeah, more like collaborating with other artists, painting like street art. But yeah, I think even as like a little girl, like I always knew that I just really loved art and that that was what I wanted to do with my life, was that I wanted to draw and I wanted to paint. But I just never realized that I could do it in quite this way and travel the world at the same time.
Yeah, that's really unique. Obviously, I've spoken to a lot of travel photographers, travel writers, but you are my first traveling artist, which is really unique, really niche, really cool. So obviously you have to make yourself some money to be able to travel a little bit more. So do you earn some money from painting murals and doing exhibitions, etc.? Is that how you sort of make your way around?
Yeah, so I've done different, like, because I've been out here now for over 3 years. So to start with, the way I was like sustaining my travel was that I was painting murals in hostels. So essentially I was like painting for my bed and board. So I got some interesting commissions. Like I remember one hostel wanted me to like recreate their childhood home on the wall. So I had to like, they were like explaining to me like where the different windows were and like which animals I needed to include. So that's kind of how I started off, was, yeah, painting murals for hostels. And then when I decided to stay longer in Bolivia, I started working and teaching English online. So I was living in Bolivia, teaching English, but to Chinese children. So
wow.
Which is an interesting combination for a couple of years. No one could understand my job when I tried to explain it to them, my lifestyle.
I can imagine that's a very, very sort of international job, way of living, I guess. That's very unique. So you've been for 3 years in Bolivia now. Just tell me a little bit about it. How's it been in the pandemic, first of all?
Actually, it's been a very intense time to be in Bolivia, because before the pandemic, at the end of 2019, we had the political crisis here. So there was a lot of conflict and, well, all across the country, and a lot of the country was shut down. So there were like blockades with the roads. So there were problems getting like food supplies to the city, and there were blockades within the city. So it was a really like tense and uncertain time. And we'd only just kind of started coming out of that. We kind of had Christmas and there was like a couple of quiet months. And then pretty much straight away we went into the pandemic. And I was living alone. So at that point I had my flat and I still had my online teaching work, but the restrictions in Bolivia were quite strict. So I could only go out like one morning a week to buy food. And like, I didn't have any access to outdoor space. So I didn't have like a balcony or a patio or anything. So like it meant for, I guess, 6.5 days of the week, I was just like locked inside this flat alone in Bolivia, like not knowing what was happening with my family really in the UK and not having like any human contact in Bolivia. So it was, yeah, like personally, it was an intense time.
I can imagine that must have been, yeah, really, really awful at times. You know, not having much contact and being outside, you know, luckily in the UK, it was 1 hour outside each day. So you sort of look forward to that bit of fresh air. And just for people who don't really understand it, could you just briefly explain what the political crisis is?
Yes, of course. So what happened was, I think it was in November 2019, the sitting president, Evo Morales, was re-elected in Bolivia. But as soon as it was announced, there were also like accusations of fraud. So essentially there then became like two sides within Bolivia. So there was the government side that wanted Evo Morales to continue and take power, to take the role again. And there was the other side, which was the resistance, which essentially was saying like that the elections, there had been widespread fraud and that he didn't have the right to become president again. So that was the divide that essentially like split the country. And within the cities as well, there was like clashes between like the government side and the resistance. And eventually what happened in December was that Evo Morales, due to widespread social pressure and also the military asked him to resign. So he stepped down from power. And then there was an interim president during like the first year of the pandemic. So that's the brief version of the political crisis.
Great timing, isn't it? Great timing, just before the pandemic, having an interim government member. There you go. And how did it feel for you? Obviously, you're there traveling. You've not grown up in Bolivia. You must have felt sort of out of it, stuck in the middle, probably a little bit scared at times.
Definitely. I mean, at the time, I was also volunteering in a children's home. So I was doing like art sessions for the children. So I think I was quite worried about like how it was affecting them, because there were clashes within the city. And in the evenings, like you heard like lots of explosions going off. So it was a really stressful time. And I remember like I would walk every day to the project, like through the city, and I would be walking through like these blockades where the resistance had like brought out like all the old furniture they could find, or like car tires. And every day, like before I went to the project, like I would call my journalist friend and ask him, like, you know, is it safe to go today? Like, is anyone going to come in and like attack the city? Are there going to be fights anywhere? And then I would do the same before I left the project to walk home, because there was no public transport. So I remember it being like a very stressful time. And there were also lots of rumors going around. So in all the WhatsApp groups, there'd be rumors like, you know, like there's going to be an attack today, like, you know, you need to buy food, like there's not going to be food arriving to the city, like buy more water because they're going to cut off the water supply. So it was a really uncertain, a really intense time, actually, looking back on it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, that sounds insane. That sounds very scary for everybody. It's good that you had that journalist friend to ring up though.
Definitely.
That's quite good thinking.
Yeah,
very scary though. I bet your family were worried back at home, weren't they?
Yeah, they were worried. And I think actually it's probably one of the few times that Bolivia's featured so much in the news, because it was like, you know, it was coming out in like newspapers and also like in the BBC and stuff. So I think quite a lot of people from the UK were like asking me, like, are you okay? You know, is everything going all right? And then obviously we kind of came out of it, and not very long afterwards we went straight into the pandemic, which was kind of even more worrying in terms of the like the infrastructure in Bolivia wasn't able to cope with it. So like very soon in the early months of the pandemic, like the hospital system collapsed here. And, you know, it was quite severe in terms of like the number of cases and people just not being able to get like any medical help. Like there was no oxygen. So, yeah, it's been, I guess, maybe one of the...
It's been a roller coaster.
It has been a roller coaster. Thank you. That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. Bless you. Did you paint any scenes from those two events at all to sort of document, or... You know, just to keep, you know, you've witnessed two very big moments in history in Bolivia over a short space of time. Did you paint any of it?
Yeah. So actually, kind of the way that I sort of like kept myself going and gave myself something to do during the pandemic and like living alone was to paint everything I'd kind of experienced in Bolivia. So I painted a big painting of the political crisis. And like I painted both sides, so the government side and the resistance. And I really tried to capture like all of the emotion and all of the intensity that had happened during that time. And then also one project I kind of found to keep myself occupied during the pandemic was I started painting the mountain view from my window, because luckily I did have a view of like the mountain in, so I lived in the city of Cochabamba and the nearest mountain is called Tunari. So I had a view of that from my window. And I started painting it like all hours of the day. So I would get up like before sunrise and I would like get my canvas out and it would be dark and I would paint like the sunrise over the mountain. And then I would stand there like under the midday heat and I would paint the mountain like in full sun. And then I was even painting like at nighttime when I couldn't even see like the colors I was mixing. I would just be like, so yeah, I think For me, the pandemic was an incredibly like artistic time. So even though I couldn't really go out, I think I produced like 30 canvases during that time. So I was just painting constantly that first yeah, I guess that first year when there were more restrictions in place.
Wow, that's fantastic. It's good to hear that you kept yourself busy and that you had that lovely view. So really, you got that lovely serene view of the mountains and then all of the chaos going on in the city. What a contrast. And is it just paint that you use, Natasha, or do you use other mediums as well?
So yeah, in terms of my canvases, I paint with acrylic paint. But when I go, so here also what I like to do is like go out to the countryside, or when I go out to small towns, like I take my small sketchbook with me. And I really like sketching with like pen and ink and watercolor. So if I, yeah, when I go out like to the countryside for a couple of days, I take like my watercolors, my watercolor pencils, my pen and ink. And then obviously, because I paint murals as well, that's more like, it's like outdoor paint, you know, like big pots of color paints and stuff. So I guess they would be like the main materials that I use.
Yeah, so you're predominantly a painter. That's fantastic.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I dabbled in watercolor paints years ago because I'm a bit of an artsy person. And it's a okay. hobby. My granddad taught me to watercolor, actually, you know, when he was alive. So it's something special, a memory, you know, from being with him. That's fantastic. And it's a lovely medium to use, particularly doing landscapes. So when you go out to the countryside to do painting, do you wild camp or do you stop in a hotel or a home, or what do you do?
Yeah, so I've done a variety of things. Like I've gone out a few times to the countryside with friends and we have camped. So I remember like I went out camping with one friend. Actually, it was the winter in Bolivia, which like people always say to me, like I've become very accustomed now to like a good climate and like the heat, but it was absolutely freezing. So we went and we camped by like the side of a river. And I just remember like waking up and my feet were so cold and but yeah, like that was a really special experience because you just feel like you're in the middle of nature. And I remember like there was a little like shepherdess who would come down and she would like bring her goats down to like drink in the river. So yeah, you were just like getting up out of your tent and you would see like the goats there around and you were talking to this little girl who didn't go to school, but she had like her slingshot to like, you know, scare away dogs or whatever might attack the sheep or the goats. And there were fields of like lavender growing and, you know, you would just go for a little walk and you would see like families like looking after like their crops of potatoes and it, you know, or when I remember someone invited us to like have to their house and they were literally like preparing like the bread over the fire and you were just like, wow, this is such an incredible gift to see this way of living and to experience the culture so closely, I think, as well.
That's amazing. Like you say, you really get off the beaten path. You really see the real side of Bolivia, don't you? And the rural side of it that tourists don't often get to see, which is a real privilege. I can imagine it was lovely. And I find that generally when you go abroad and you venture off into the sticks somewhere, people are very friendly and they want to welcome you. They want to hear about where you've come from and your culture as much as you want to hear from them. And I'm sure you've probably experienced the same, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely. I would say like one of the challenges of traveling like solo here to the Bolivian countryside as well is that Spanish isn't necessarily spoken widely in the countryside. So the other kind of principal language here is Quechua. So actually, even in the cities, in the markets, the women who come in to like sell their fruit or vegetables in the markets might sometimes just speak Quechua and like a tiny bit of Spanish or not understand Spanish. So now I didn't come out here speaking Spanish, but I've learned, you know, I've learned to communicate. I can get by. I'm not the best linguist, but I can, you know, I can have a good conversation in Spanish. But like Quechua, I don't know anything of. So if I, you know, I remember a few times I was out traveling with a friend in a different part of the Bolivian countryside and we got lost. We'd been walking up the mountains and it was late at night. So, you know, we were literally trying to trek through fields. We'd lost the path. We had no lights. We had no extra food with us. We didn't know the way back to the town that we were staying in. And we came across this tiny little house And there was kind of this like this grandma figure, this lady who came out, and, you know, she was obviously, she was a bit scared because these two strangers had like were walking through her lands. And we were trying to ask her questions in Spanish of like, you know, where's the path? Like, where's the town? And she was like responding to us in Quechua and like pointing in this direction. And so, I mean, yeah, that was also an interesting, we did in the end find the path and find the town, but we got chased by quite a few stray dogs, and we ended up bumping into like a couple of grandmas who just spoke Quechua and who very, very kindly directed us back to where we needed to be.
You could have done with that little girl slingshot by the sounds of it for the dogs.
Yes, definitely. Actually, yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you forget the local languages as well. And I think Quechua, I think it's spoken in parts of Peru as well, I think. So I know the older generations there, like in Bolivia, and I'm sure some other countries in South America as well, they only speak Quechua or you know, one of the older languages, and not necessarily Spanish. But it's cool that you've picked up some Spanish. Did you teach yourself during lockdown, or is it just purely from talking to people and meeting people along the way?
Yeah, so I never studied Spanish in school. I'd studied French. So when I came out here, it was just about like conversation. And luckily, like, I don't have much like shame in terms of like, I don't, you know, I just kind of launch myself into conversation. And I've never really, what I still like miss in my Spanish is like the grammar. So, you know, I really still need to like sit down and study my verbs. But I'm a big believer in like just practicing and communicating. So my first year here, I volunteered in a project with children in a children's home, and like they didn't speak English. So I just had to communicate in the art sessions in Spanish. And luckily I've met some really, really amazing people here. So I've had a lot of Bolivian friends, and I've been to a lot of Bolivian parties or been on trips traveling with my friends. And yeah, you just end up kind of getting used to like communicating, and even if you're not sure of the exact structure of the sentence, I think the main thing is like the connection with people and the practice as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's like if someone came here and I could tell, you know, if they mixed up a sentence a little bit, I'd still get the idea of what they were asking me. So I guess it's the same, really. I think it's fantastic that you can just pick up a language just by fully just, you know, immersing yourself in the country and like you say, throwing yourself in it and having a go. I think that's fantastic. So you've been in Bolivia for 3 years now. I'm guessing you probably know it pretty well. So where are some of your favorite places to visit?
I think one of the things that like, I think Bolivia is not very well known, and I think it's quite overlooked as a travel destination. Like even before the pandemic, like really now there aren't many tourists coming here at all. But even before the pandemic, a lot of people would go to Chile. And then just cross into the Sala de Uyuni, which is like the salt flats in the bottom of the country. And they would just be in Bolivia for like a tour of like 3 or 5 days. And that's all they would kind of see. But there's so much like in the north here, there's the Amazon region. And also there are just incredible mountains. Like one of my favorite places to go is the enormous lake on the border of like Bolivia and Peru, which is called Lago Titicaca. And it's so vast that it just looks like a sea. And there are these incredible like islands in the middle of it. Is like they're called the Island of the Sun and the Island of the Moon. And you can take like a little boat out to them, and they've got kind of these old mysterious temples or like holy sites on them. And they have like these local communities who've lived there for centuries and who will give you like little guided tours around them. So, I mean, that's a really, really incredible, magical place. And then I also like, you know, when I went down to the south of Bolivia, there's a city called Tarija, which is like a wine growing region. So you can go on like wine tours. And we also went out to see like the Valley of the Condors. So we went on a camping trekking trip, and I think we ended up seeing like 50 condors or something in that weekend, which was incredible. Even the guide was like amazed. My favorite thing about Bolivia is that there's so much like untamed wilderness, that there's so much like richness in terms of the nature here.
you know, like even just outside the city, you go out and you're in the mountains and you can walk and there are like no houses, no like fields. So I think that's something that we don't necessarily have so much in Europe anymore. And that's really unique. It's a really special quality about Bolivia.
It sounds idyllic. So Bolivia, in comparison to some of the other countries you've visited in South America, how well is it set up for tourism? Do you think it's an up-and-coming destination, or do you think it's fairly set up for tourism? Like, how would you rate it compared to, say, Chile or Mexico or you know, the more established areas?
I would not describe Bolivia as up-and-coming in terms of tourism, because I think I would say it's quite slow in terms of development. You know, changes here happen very slowly. Like, for instance, before the pandemic, it was really hard to find any information online about, say, for instance, attractions or what was available. Like, it was a case of you had to arrive in a place, you had to go and ask, you know, you had to go and like knock on the doors of like hostels or cafes or and with the pandemic, there is now a lot more available online. Like, that's a big transition I've noticed. Like, a lot of small businesses and tourist business have become, you know, more prominent on like social media, and you can find out things online. But it's not necessarily an easy destination in terms of like traveling around, and it's definitely not really for people who are used to like a lot of like really comfortable travel. You know, I mean, I guess you could come and do Bolivia and you could fly between cities and stay in nice hotels. But if you want to come like off the beaten track, if you don't have your own car, like you have to be on like long bus journeys. And, you know, that's quite often like quite uncomfortable. And you might be staying in a mixture of hostels that some might be OK, some might not be so great. And I think also it's good to have like a basic understanding of Spanish, because a lot of people you find here, especially even in the cities, but especially off the beaten track, like you're not going to be able to like just rely on English. And so I would say it's a challenging destination. But I would love for more people to come and like see it and experience it, because it is like this magical land, really. There's so much to see and do here. It's an incredible place.
It sounds amazing. And I guess really it's an adventure, it's a challenge, but if you're willing to take on that challenge, you will be rewarded. And for some people, it's all about finding these real hidden gems, you know, places that aren't spoiled by over-tourism. So for people like that, I'm guessing Bolivia is the ideal place, if you don't mind roughing it and taking a bit of a gamble. I certainly would. But like you say, if you're looking for something a bit more established, perhaps visit one of the neighbouring countries. Fantastic. And do Bolivian people, do they speak about wanting to have more tourists? Do you feel that that's something that the country is looking to do to gear up more for tourism? You say a lot of businesses have gone online over the pandemic.
No, I mean, to be honest, I've never heard, like, if I could say that there was that ambition, I've never like heard that spoken about kind of widely, you know, to like get more tourists into Bolivia. I think in places that I visited during the pandemic and still in this current time, that before used to have like backpackers and people from overseas coming, I think they have noticed, well, obviously, like, because now there's essentially almost no one arriving from outside the country, but what they talk about is there's been a shift from international tourists to local tourism. So for instance, this town where I am now, whereas before it would have been a bit like a, you know, a small offbeat backpackers haven, now all the people arrive are from like the biggest city, which is 2 hours away. So it's Bolivian tourism. And the same when I was over by that lake that I was talking about in between the border of Bolivia and Peru. Like before, it would have been, you know, a massive stop on the backpackers trail, like people coming up from Chile or passing through Peru. And now it's people from the capital of Bolivia, La Paz, that go there for the day or the weekend. So actually, all the places that I've been to since the pandemic has started talk about that there has been a drop off, but that essentially the big change is that there's a lot more national tourism, that people want to escape the cities, they want to like experience their own country and get out to nature. So I think at least that means that these places are kind of getting by in terms of making a living.
That's fantastic. It's the same story here in the UK. There's been a lot of, I mean, I had a staycation in the summer, and I think, you know, we start to appreciate what's on our doorstep. And it's great to hear that the same is happening in Bolivia and other countries too. So, you know, you've been in Bolivia for a few years now, and the idea was to make your way up through South America. So what's 2022 looking like for you? Do you think you might move on to a new country, or you settled in Bolivia for a bit longer? What are your plans?
Well, I still have like the ambition and hope that one day I will end up in Colombia, because I always wanted to go to Colombia and learn salsa dancing. But for the moment, my plan is to actually to come and live in Samaipata. So I have a job here, and I'm going to teach English and art in a small center for children and young people. So I kind of really just want to spend a year experiencing life in the Bolivian countryside and work on writing my novel, and also lots of painting as well. So that's my plan for the moment. And then, I mean, there are so many places in the world that I really, really want to like travel to. So like explore Asia. But yeah, I guess one year at a time. In the world first.
I know. So you cut off a little bit there, Natasha, halfway through that. So just for the listeners, you said that, you know, you've got a job at the moment in Bolivia, you've moved into this new town, you're working on a novel. That's impressive. What's the novel about?
So it's the story of like a young Bolivian girl, and so it's kind of about her journey, essentially. Yeah, because I was really inspired with the work I did here in the children's home in the first year, like seeing a lot of the difficulties and like the emotional challenges that the children go through. And I wanted to kind of give them a voice as well.
That's amazing. That sounds incredible. Have to keep an eye out for that when it does get published. And then you said you've got lots of Asia you'd like to explore as well. Any that sort of make the top of the list, or just, you know, you're happy to sort of make your way through Asia and see what takes your fancy?
So I would really love to spend time in India, because interestingly, one of the things that I've connected with here in Bolivia is I guess kind of like the Eastern culture also of like meditation and yoga. So I've started like studying yoga here more seriously, and I would really love to like go and spend time in an ashram in India and like deepen those practices. And I've always had like a calling to like Nepal. I'd love to travel and see Vietnam. I really love Asian food. Like for me to go to Japan and to like to eat sushi, or you know, to go and eat some of the Korean dishes. Actually, that's really like my favorite food in the world is Japanese and Korean food. So yeah, to go and experience those cultures, and also to like be in places where I could study like yoga and meditation, for me would be a really special travel, the next trip that I do, I think.
That would be incredible. I think we'd make very good travel buddies, you know, Natasha, because I'd love to do all of that as well if I can ever get out of the UK.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you will. I mean, at some point, like it's so hard to know what's going to happen these next few years, but you imagine that at some point soon that travel will become more accessible again. Or, you know, I really hope so, because obviously for people like us who are really like passionate about travel, it's one of the challenges of this current time that we seem to be like in the country we're in, and we can't really move around the world very much.
It is massively. But I can recommend Vietnam to you. I've been there and it's a fantastic country. Especially if you enjoy Cambodia, you'd enjoy Vietnam. Highly recommend. I've never been to India. I was meant to go to Sri Lanka actually, but then an explosion, and shortly after that
the pandemic happened, so it's on the list anyway. Lots on the list.
Yeah.
But fantastic. Yeah. So all in all, how long have you been a traveling artist for then? I know you said you've been in Bolivia for 3 years. So how long roughly have you been sort of on the road and traveling and living this life?
One of the things is, I don't know if it's just because so much has happened to me in Bolivia that it feels like I've been here a lifetime, but I struggle to kind of remember what years that I've done different trips. I mean, the first like significant traveling trip I did was to Uganda when I was before I went to university. So it was my gap year trip. But at that point, I still wasn't really painting. I went out to volunteer, to work in a nursery and travel around. But yeah, the first art trip I did was that one to Cambodia, which was when I must have been like in my mid-20s, I think. So yeah, like a fair few years, I would say, about maybe 6 or 7 years I've been traveling and painting.
So out of all of the murals that you've painted, what is your favorite and why?
Oh, that's a really good question. So I would say like my favorite in terms of my mural painting experience were the murals I did in my first year in Bolivia, because at that point I was collaborating with a Japanese artist who was also living in Cochabamba, and I also painted with an American artist who was over from the States volunteering here. We painted one absolutely gigantic mural in a kindergarten, which is a funny story actually, because we had a really beautiful design and it was going to be the three of us collaborating and painting this mural, which had like a cute kind of it had like a dragon and like children flying on the back of the dragon, and it had flowers around and a little boy sitting on a big flower. So the head teacher of the kindergarten like absolutely loved the design, and we had all of the paints ready to go. And then on the day that we were meant to like start painting the mural, my Japanese friend came in and he had a different design, and he showed it to me and I was like, oh, that's, I'm not sure, that looks a tiny bit like it could be scary for children, but like, you know, nothing major. It was just like, it looked a bit like too funny scary monsters, and I was like, but anyway, I kind of decided that that was his business and, you know, I wasn't going to intervene. And then essentially as we were painting the mural, the teachers from the kindergarten started coming up to me and being like, he's painting like the devil from the mines, because here there's a really rich like traditional culture. And there's lots of like beliefs that we don't really necessarily know about as foreigners to the country. And one of them is that there's this spirit that lives in the mines that is essentially kind of a devil. And he's called like the teal. And what I hadn't realized, because I didn't know this Bolivian, you know, belief, and I didn't know what the teal looks like, that essentially my friend in his very sweet artistic way had decided to paint two gigantic devils from the mine on this mural while I was busy like painting like the cute children and the flowers. And it became,
oh no,
by that point he was so involved and he'd spent so much time painting these really 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 beautiful he's a stunning artist, he painted them incredibly, and I was like, they're the most beautiful thing artistically that I've seen. And at the same time, I've got the teachers coming and saying to me, like, this is going to curse the kindergarten. And I was like, oh no, what's happened?
I'm thinking only in Bolivia would you have that issue. What did you have to do? Did you have to paint over it?
No, I mean, actually, it's still there. It was kind of like, I think it just became like, it did become a funny story. And I think, technically I still have pending to like make the devils like less scary. But you know, the kindergarten is shut during the pandemic. That's one of been, I think that's a major issue here in Bolivia, is that there hasn't been education for the past 2 years.
And I think also this year they're not going to go straight back into full like education. So, you know, it's not been open. So, in, you know, the devils are there, but there's no one like in the kindergarten, essentially.
Maybe the devils did curse the kindergarten and they can't come back.
No, oh, no, that would be a terrible. No, we can't say that. I can't believe that.
No, I'm sorry to put that in your head. I'm sure that's not true. That's a brilliant story, though. I can see why that one stuck in your head.
It just, coming from the UK, you don't think about like those cultural sensitivities. I think I just came over here and was like, you know, oh, it looks nice, you know, let's put it on a wall. And now I've really got more awareness of like images like that. You know, there are like, for instance, you can't make generalizations, but like there are some people here who are more sensitive to like certain images. So I remember when I was working with like the children in the first year, and they didn't want me to like draw like a 6-point star or something, because for them it had like a bad meaning. Whereas for us, it's just like the easy star that you draw to put on like Christmas decorations. So yeah, I think generally as an artist traveling, you know, if you go to cultures where there are more beliefs and more sensitivities, it is an important thing to find out about and ask about, because you don't know as an outsider what some people might find like either offensive or, you know, not right to put on a giant mural painting.
No, it's definitely a learning curve, isn't it? Yeah, interesting one. Okay, final question then. Do you have a dream destination landscape or person that you would like to paint? Do you have a painting bucket list?
I should have a painting bucket list. I feel like that is an awesome idea. And actually, now you've asked me, I don't know why I don't have a painting bucket list.
There you go.
Yeah, maybe this is what I can do while I'm in Samaipata. I'm going to create my painting bucket list. I would say more than a painting bucket list, like one thing that I really want to do is, especially with like children and young people, like I really want to work on more like big scale projects, especially murals that inspire them to like explore their own creativity. So I would love to like continue working on like large murals that essentially like collaborations like with children and with other artists, and where the children like get to design their own part and paint their own section of the mural, and that it can be, you know, I'm really inspired by like those kind of like creative communities where everyone puts like their own creative part into a project. So I guess for me, like a creative, a painting bucket list would involve like large scale community murals in different parts of the world.
Yeah. So meeting different communities and bringing them together through painting. I think that's a fantastic bucket list idea. And you'll have to let me know when you have a proper paint bucket list sorted.
I will. In fact, that is a great idea. And I think I need to do a blog post about that.
You heard it here first. Thank everybody. Oh, brilliant. Well, Natasha, it's been absolutely fantastic speaking to you despite the internet connection not agreeing with us, and I've learned some things about Bolivia that I'd never known, and I think I would actually, you know, like to visit now when I do eventually get over to South America. So thank you for that, and thank you for coming on and telling us about your exciting life as a traveling artist.
Well, yeah, thank you for the time. Also, whenever you're thinking of coming over to Bolivia, just drop me a line, and I can tell you the interesting places to go and visit here, the interesting off-road places.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Natasha. Take care, and don't paint any more devils on kids' walls.
Okay, I will try not to. Thank you so much, Laura. Yeah.